Rancho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So we still have transfers till October 5th. So we are going to be talking about some transfers at the top with Morata joining Juve somewhat surprisingly. But with Serie A starting, we are bringing back one of our favorite segments. We'll go over the winners and losers of the weekend in Serie A. And today we have not one, but two guests, which I'm excited to catch up to. We're going to have Steve Moore on Lazio. We haven't talked about them in way too long. So we'll catch up on everything going on at Lazio with Steve Moore. And then the final segment of the podcast available to all is going to be Chloe Beresford on Fiorentina, which won on Saturday. In between all that stuff, we are going to talk a lot about transfers, of course. But let's start here. I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. And last night I tweeted you that once again, transfer gods good to us with this Morata to Juve move. So everything was pointing to Dzeko. The delays of the Milik Dzeko domino made Juve change course. They go and they get Morata on. Once again, Juve acquires Morata on kind of a unique formula. 1 year loan deal can be renewed to a second year of a loan, or they can buy him outright. So always creative formulas for Morata at Juve. Now, Alex, I know Morata has to be one of your least favorite players. You are very familiar with it at from his time at Chelsea. I have to say there's no player I think I've been more wrong on in recent years. Not once, but twice, because when he went to Juve the first time, I thought Juve had made a big mistake not signing Iturbe. Boy, did that turn out to be wrong prediction, and I would have bet the house that Morata would have done well at Chelsea, and that was as far away from the truth as possible. So Alex, let me ask it to you this way. When we made our Scudetto picks, we went on the assumption Juve was going to get Dzeko, but now that they have Morata, are you having some second thoughts on picking Juve over Inter for the Scudetto?
I mean, not really. I'd love to say yes, actually, because it just drives home how much I don't enjoy Alvaro Morata. But he's annoyingly going to be probably good for Juventus. I just feel that he's going to a situation where, yeah, there's pressure, but I actually think there'll be some comfort for him. We know his mentality is not that of Dzeko or Suarez. I mean, Suarez is his own person altogether, but you know, those are dogs, kind of Dzeko and Suarez. You don't really worry about their mentality too much. With Morata, it's so thin. It is your thinnest toilet paper that would give you a severe, severe rash. I mean, there is just the mentality isn't there for Morata. And I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I'm not saying he's not a nice guy. I'm talking about as a footballer, as a professional. Oh, so that's where I get a little nervous. Like, is his mentality just so bad that it doesn't matter that he'll have a nurturing Pirlo and Ronaldo and Dybala and even young players like Kulusevski and, of course, some veterans in the back? You know, he's got a lot of comfort there, but his mentality could be so bad that that won't matter. But honestly, like, if you were to ask me, Alex, where's a place where Morata can revive is a tough word because he still had his moments at Atletico, but, you know, he has not turned into the striker that you and some predicted. But where's a place, Alex, where he could be comfortable and have some good goals, maybe some important goals? Juve would be one of the teams that I would say. I mean, really, they would be, because there'll be familiarity. I think he'll bust his ass for Pirlo. I think that's a dynamic where I know Morata's not like early 20s now, but I still kind of view him as a baby on this Juve team, if that makes any sense. I know he's got to be, what, late 20s now or something like that. But still, when you think about all the senior heads there, including the manager, I feel like Morata is still going to be trying to impress a lot of those people, Pirlo included. So maybe that's one thing I'm giving him on the mentality side that could be a positive. Now, once again, I don't believe in his mentality so much that that might not do it for him, and he could be flopping like a fish like he did in the Premier League and looking to the ref every second for a foul that's not there. But I do think this is a situation for him that he can keep his name at least in a good light and not a negative light. So it's not enough to scare me off picking Juve for the Scudetto, but I think I would have felt more sturdy with my prediction had it been Dzeko or Suarez. But I still think Morata is, once again, going to be annoyingly good for Juve, which will annoy me because some will then try and say, oh, Alex, you're so spot off about Morata. No, I'm not. Put him back in the Premier League and see what happens. Or put him in a situation where he has to be the guy and see what happens. So that's my take on it. I'm not wavering. I'm not being stubborn. Maybe I am being a little bit, but I'm still sticking with Juve. But it shall be interesting with Alvaro Morata. It certainly, certainly shall. So that's my take on all of it, David. What did you make of this deal overall for Juve?
First of all, kudos on what a good and measured take. And I think that's actually the right take. I think this is a perfect situation for Morata. And one of the big reasons why I really felt he was going to do so well at Chelsea is how good he was at Juve. And I think the best Juve we've seen in this run of Scudetti was when they made the Champions League final with Morata and Tevez, and they almost won it, that Barcelona game. That was closer than I think most people realize. So yeah, I agree. Perfect situation for him. And as far as, you know, changing how I feel about my Scudetto pick, I mean, on the surface, you would think I'd be even more confident on Inter because I'm a big Dzeko guy. I've always said it. I think he's a superb player. As much as I like Morata, I think Dzeko's a superior player. But when I look at this Juve, I think this kind of makes sense. And I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment on Kulusevski, who was fantastic in his debut, which I was expecting. I'm a big believer in him, and he needs to start regularly for Juve. It just brings a ton to the table that they've been missing. I think everyone saw it in the game on Sunday. It just feels like he's a player with an extra gear. So with Morata coming in, I think this benefits definitely Kulusevski, but also Dybala, who we've always said is kind of a weird position on the pitch. So if Ronaldo, Dybala, Kulusevski play regularly, Morata's kind of the first person off the bench, or they rotate them based on the opponent, to me, that really makes sense because Dybala and Kulusevski are good, two of my favorite players in Serie A, and I think they really bring a lot to the table. As I teased earlier, this is a fascinating deal for a transfer geek like me. Before we get to the financials, I found this really interesting, the domino effects on this. So first of all, we thought the domino was Dzeko and Milik. So Milik going to Roma, Dzeko going to Juve. That over the weekend, there were some delays, and this had all to do with Milik's negotiations with Napoli. There's still that ongoing fine situation from the mutiny in November. De Laurentiis wants compensation for that. Milik is still owed two months worth of salaries. De Laurentiis was basically trying to withhold that. So they were going back and forth. Juve just was sick of waiting, and they go in and swoop in and get Morata. But interestingly, there's another domino here, because for Morata to be free, Atletico Madrid had to get Suarez, who was linked to Juve, and he took that exam in Perugia, that Italian exam in Perugia. But interestingly, Suarez doesn't go to Juve. He goes to Atletico, which then in turn frees up Morata. As far as the financial of the deal, interesting. I've read on Di Marzio's site, $9 million, and other sites, $10 million for this year's loan. So you have that. Then you have his wages. Next season, they can buy him outright for $45 million, or they can extend the loan for another $10 million. So interesting deal. I wonder too, could this be a Machiavellian ploy? Juve keeps Morata one season, and then they sign Milik on a Bosman next January, and then have him. It's possible. That would be pretty fascinating. But I'm cautiously optimistic, like you, Alex. Morata, Juve, Pirlo, they played together on that team. I think he'll fit in really well. He really enjoyed being in Italy. His wife is from Venice. Morata left Juve. You know, when he arrived at Juve, he was a single guy. Now comes back with a third baby on the way. So let's see. Definitely fit in really well at Juve. The best phase of his career was there. So I'm with you. I'm cautiously optimistic he'll do well. And it doesn't change too much how I feel about the Scudetto. You know, I always felt Inter was had a little bit of an edge, although, you know, based on how Juve played against Sampdoria, that, to be honest, gives me some second thoughts. Zeko not arriving, yeah, but I think Morata, as you said, the fit makes sense. So, Alex, let's switch gears. Let's talk about other things about transfers. So, two Chelsea left backs linked to Serie A. Emerson Palmieri linked once again to Juve. If they can move De Sciglio, the other Marcos Alonso linked to Inter. Conte, who's now on Instagram, I'm sure you'll be very happy to see, Alex, was watching your boys on Sunday. But let me ask you this. Who do you think Chelsea would prefer to let go between Emerson and Marcos Alonso?
I mean, probably both, to really answer the question, honestly. I think, given the context now, Emerson, because Frank can get more use out of Marcos Alonso. The reason why I honestly said both was, if the deals were actually good enough on both, Azpilicueta could always be the backup to Ben Chilwell. So there is that emergency scenario if the financials were that good. I don't think that'll happen, but Reece James is kind of fully taken right back now, starting the first two Premier League ones. Azpilicueta, you know Frank would like to get involved as long as he's not forcing it, so maybe he could be backup left back. But I say Emerson because Alonso, he just has more use to Frank right now. Like, you got to remember that maybe they're in the same category to Chelsea fans of, ugh, we'll just get rid of now. And honestly, to Chelsea, Alonso has so much more experience in the Premier League than Emerson. Like, even though Alonso, in my opinion, has been really underwhelming, he's had big moments, and I'm not saying he hasn't had a good season, maybe a good season and a half. But, I mean, he's just been out there. Whatever you think of him, he's been out there. He's had a lot of bad moments, and somehow he's gotten away with a lot of starts. But the Premier League experience can be useful for Frank now. Emerson, it's like, clearly he's just not doing everything in training I think Frank Lampard wants, and Frank also doesn't trust him in games, just like he doesn't trust Alonso. But Emerson, it really just seems like it would almost be a risk to play him at this point. At least Frank knows when Alonso's out there, yeah, he'll be poor defensively, but he could help me in the attacking phase. So to really let go of two left backs between now and the deadline would be quite ridiculous. So I feel it's Emerson, just given the context of the situation. So I don't think Alonso will play a lot once Chilwell gets into the side, but I feel like Alonso's deal, they also might take a little bit more seriously. Like, maybe they can get a bit more for him because he's actually this player that is playing somewhat regularly. So yeah, I would say Emerson, given the context, they'd prefer to get rid of. But I stand by my original answer. I mean, both. They're definitely not in Lampard's plans. So yeah, that's my take. All right, so David, that's a decent transition because that's transfer related. And now we'll just transition to our hot transfer topics. So let's start with this, David. Oh, one of our favorite defenders. Where could Daniel Rugani and Sami Khedira head next?
Yeah, so Juve is on top of Morata, still working on some outgoing moves. Luca Pellegrini could be loaned out to either Genoa or Fiorentina, which is why Emerson is back on their list. They would also have to get rid of De Sciglio, but the other two players that Juve is looking to move are Rugani and Khedira for different reasons. Rugani would bring in a pretty decent plusvalenza, although, you know, hasn't played well, but I think they've amortized basically all his value, so he'd be a pure profit. He's been linked to Premier League clubs, Newcastle and West Ham. Juve director Paratici is definitely exhausting all options to try to move him, although you have to wonder now that Juve is playing three at the back if he's maybe more valuable there, especially with De Ligt out for a while. So let's see. I think it would have to be a pretty decent offer for Juve to consider it. And Sami Khedira, it will not be a transfer to PSG. It'll almost certain he's linked to them. Tuchel likes Khedira, who seems to be a favorite for managers in general. It sounds like Juve would have to release Khedira first, and then he can sign with PSG. The good news for Juve is, unlike Higuain, at least Khedira doesn't have a transfer fee left to amortize. He was signed on a Bosman, so it won't be a big loss, if any, like Juve took with Higuain. So let's see if Rugani goes to the Premier League, and Khedira will likely be at PSG next.
Okay. All right, David, which center back could AC Milan sign next?
Yeah, so yesterday, and we'll get to Milan and the winners and losers with Romagnoli out, they had Gabbia and Chiaier. They are definitely thin there. They are looking to bring in another center back. Now, Milenkovic would be very expensive. They are looking at other options. One of them is on Celtic Ayer, and the other one is on Schalke, Nastasic, left-footed center back. He previously played at Fiorentina before he went to Man City. Milan is in talks with Schalke. I definitely expect them to get another center back. Even yesterday, Maldini, before the game, confirmed this. So let's see what happens. But I expect Milan this week to intensify their pursuit of a center back.
Okay. All right. But Fulham's been busy, as clubs often are when they come up from the lower league. But what can Fulham fans expect from Marlon?
Yeah, so he is the Sassuolo center back that arrived from Barcelona a while back. Here's the thing with Marlon. I think he's a pretty good player. The problem is Sassuolo really doesn't emphasize defense. It's not so, you know, when people ask me, you know, is he a good defender? It's hard to tell because Sassuolo definitely really doesn't emphasize defense much. Now, was he as good as, say, when Acerbi was at Sassuolo? No. But can he be a serviceable defender? I absolutely believe that. Because he was Sassuolo, he's very good at building from the back. He's a fairly quick center back. I think, you know, I think he can do pretty well. There's, you know, I think he can be an adequate center back in the Premier League. They are offering 15 million for him. Barcelona has a right of first refusal. They'll probably, seeing their financial situation, I doubt they'll bring him back. So I think odds are Fulham will sign Marlon, and I think it's a pretty good move. I'll be curious to see him playing on a team that emphasizes defense more than Sassuolo, and that's pretty much almost all of them. So I'm pretty intrigued by this one.
I mean, Fulham went out and got a left back who's been on my podcast, but a left back, Anthony Robinson, who almost went to AC Milan. So you'll remember that name from January, but yeah, he had a heart issue. And I was like, whoa, all of a sudden, Asmir Begovic and Anthony Robinson, two people I kind of know personally, are going to AC Milan. I might have to be an AC Milan fan. But once again, the Anthony Robinson thing fell through because of health complications. But he just went to Fulham. And then, this is still Serie A related, I promise, right back, well, he played more on the left-hand side in Serie A, Olaena from Torino goes to Fulham, and he'll be probably maybe a fullback for both sides. And then they also got Lyon's right back, Kenny Tete, who's rated fairly highly and is still decently young. So Fulham, they're certainly trying to stay up this time with Scott Parker. So yeah, interesting. All right, this person's always interesting, David. Where could Super Mario Balotelli head next?
You know, Raiola said that he was going to find the European team for Balotelli, that there's always a market for him, that it's too soon for MLS and probably even Turkey. I didn't expect it to be another Serie A team, but it sounds like Genoa could be his next destination. We know Preziosi does like those big name signings. Genoa, you know, had Destro and Pandev, and we'll get to them in winners and losers. But, you know, Balotelli would be intriguing there. I have to say, I think Balotelli and Pandev on the same team is fascinating. Pandev, to me, in a lot of ways, is the opposite of Balotelli getting so much late in his career. So I kind of like what Genoa has been doing in the transfer market, and I think they can gamble on Balotelli. So let's see if he ends up there. We might get one more season of Super Mario in Serie A after all.
Lovely. All right, last hot transfer topic. What would you say the odds are Koulibaly leaves before the window closes, David?
Yeah, so we'll do this through our episodes through October 5th. I'll kind of do a transfer rumor rate or percentage on Koulibaly because it, the more time passes and he started against Parma, I'm thinking it's starting to lean like he'll stay. So I'm going to say, as we're recording now, I'm going to give it a 65% chance Koulibaly stays at Napoli. It just in this market, huge, huge transfer fees are not easy to get by. Man City, because of the Jorginho thing in the past, aren't negotiating directly with Napoli. Doesn't seem like PSG has a huge urgency to sign Koulibaly, and it sounds he would prefer the Premier League. So the more time passes, the more I think it's likely Koulibaly stays at Napoli. Okay, so now let's talk some calcio. We haven't covered Lazio in way too long. So here's our friend Steve Moore to chat about them. So I'm very excited to welcome our next guest, Stephen Moore. It's been way too long since we had him on the podcast. I actually hadn't spoken to Steve in a while. Steve used to work with me on the Marzio site. He's a great journalist, up-and-coming journalist. He is a founder and one of the owners of an excellent Lazio site, and he's on here to talk about Lazio called the Laziali. And you can follow Steve at S_K_Moore on Twitter. A lot of great stuff there, focused on Lazio, but all of Serie A as well. So, Steve, always a pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be back on.
Awesome, buddy. Okay, so let's start here on Lazio. Because, you know, as I was getting ready for the season, you know, I looked at the moves that Lazio actually made, and I was like, huh, not too bad. But, you know, I feel like there is kind of this hanging over Lazio. You know, the season didn't end the way we were hoping for Lazio before the break. They were in competing for the title. They crawl to the Champions League, and the summer window's been a little frustrating. So do you think there's kind of this dark cloud hanging over Lazio, Steve? Does that concern you, or do you think once they start playing, the team will be just fine?
Kind of a mix of both. Personally, myself, I think that a hangover is likely to happen just due to the fact that although everyone's had this shorter kind of break, I guess you can say, since last season ended, a lot of the new arrivals haven't been with the team. Muriqi and Fares still haven't been able to train with the team. I think Fares just trained with the team for the first time today. So I know Escalante and Pepe Reina have been signed, but apart from them, it's kind of be something where not a lot of people are used to playing with each other, and it takes time to adapt. I know that Fares is from the league, so hopefully he'll be able to adapt very quickly, but there's also that absence of Senad Lulic, who's a key figure in the Lazio team, who he's not even being included in the squad list. So with regards to the team and the way the season is going to kind of go out once it starts, I think there is going to be a little bit of a hangover, and especially if Inzaghi doesn't implement new tactics.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you there. So you've mentioned a few of the players. Obviously, Lazio is getting ready to play in the Champions League. Last season, definitely depth was many thought that was their Achilles heel. So how do you feel about Lazio's depth? Do you think there's enough for A, having a good showing in the Champions League, and B, more importantly, staying in top four in Serie A, which is probably the more important goal between the two?
Yeah, so coming into the season, I've been asked a lot about what do I think Lazio will kind of achieve this season, or what would you be happy with? And I think that kind of exiting the group stage of the Champions League would be kind of one for me, a benefit or a massive kind of victory for the club as a whole, but also finishing in a top four spot in Serie A again, just to participate in the Champions League once again. So personally, looking at their depth, I still don't think that they did a good enough job as of yet. There's still 2 weeks left in the transfer market, so to be determined, but I don't think that they've done a good enough job kind of reinforcing the team. I still think that a midfielder is needed. I still think that a second striker is needed. And obviously on that defensive department, I think we are going to be very stretched with regards to quality depth, if you want to put it that way. Looking at Radu's position, I don't think we have a certain person who can fulfill that spot after he is kind of to move away as it still stands. And even looking at a player like Vavro, who was brought in last season for Acerbi, he's even injured too. So you're looking at this team that is going to be very stretched, I feel, at the start of the season, especially with regards to the defensive department. So I think that they should have definitely been more active on the market and tried to sign more quality players who are experienced to kind of give them this overall boost into the next season.
So it seems the one player who is getting the most buzz and, you know, fairly significant transfer fee, especially in this COVID world, is Muriqi. So what do you expect from him? Obviously, we know how great Immobile is. So how do you see him? Do you see him as someone as more of a backup, someone that can complement them? And in general, what do you expect from him his first year at Lazio?
Yeah, first off, I think Muriqi is going to be a great addition. I think it's something that Lazio doesn't currently have in their squad. A lot of people have said that he's kind of similar to a Felipe Caicedo in the way he's able to hold up the ball. But I think that he's an even bigger threat inside the opponent's 18-yard box when crosses are going to be flying in from Lazio and Fares on the flank. So we've kind of seen not too many headed goals go in. I know Immobile is one of the best strikers I personally believe in Europe. But with regards to his heading ability, I think there's definitely some better strikers out there than him. So Muriqi kind of brings this different quality and traits and skills to this team that I think will overall benefit the team as a whole. But I think that he will also be playing alongside Immobile, but I think Correa is going to be the first option alongside Immobile just because of that partnership they've established. I think Muriqi will take some time, hopefully not too long, but some time to kind of adapt to this team and with Correa or with Immobile. But I think the first pairing that Inzaghi is definitely going to do ahead of this season is going to be Correa and Immobile. And then I think Muriqi will be either replacing Immobile or replacing Correa, but we'll kind of see him on and off the bench and hopefully starting in some of the games against the lower tier sides in Serie A. But yeah, obviously he's not too experienced in the top five league, so a lot of people are kind of questioning the transfer fee and the ability that he's going to be able to have if he can perform at this level. But you look at someone like Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, who was bought from Belgium. He wasn't in a top five league, and look how he's kind of turned out, right? So I think we've got to give him some time and hopefully see what happens, but hoping for the best with him.
Absolutely. So let's talk about Lucas Lieva. And I want to ask you this, because, you know, as I get ready for the season, I always like to break down teams red, which are, you know, top players that can start for a Scudetto contender, blue chip players that can have a role on a team that, you know, is qualifying for the Champions League. And when I look at Lazio, this has been true for a few years now. I look at their blue chip players, their core players, and you would take Lazio's five core players really against anyone in Serie A. But Lucas Lieva is obviously getting up there in age. He's had injuries. Like, A, how important do you see him on the team? And do you think he can have at least one more strong season where he can still be counted on as a key player?
Yeah, as you said, I think he's definitely one of the kind of cornerstones in Lazio and Simone Inzaghi's tactics. I think he's one of the most important pieces that does not get enough recognition. I know that some people have been kind of praising him over the past few years, especially after a spell at Liverpool. But definitely he's one of the main players on Lazio that's able to kind of provide that linkage between the defensive play and the attacking play. And he's just such a great player overall, winning back the ball, tackling, being that aggressive physical presence in the middle of the park. So it's unfortunate to see him have that injury at the end of last year, and it's kind of also going into the season as well, which is why we've seen new signing Gonzalo Escalante being used in that kind of Regista role, if you were to say. So I think he's going to be able to kind of have another 1 to 2 years of offering something at Lazio, but he's definitely someone that Lazio are going to have to invest long-term into for a replacement, because I've yet to see how Escalante plays or if even Cataldi can fill that role. But for the time being, we need to kind of find someone in the long term who can take over that position, just similar to Vulić and Radu, who are also on a team aging as well.
Yeah, well said there. So this is a question that I've been asking our Lazio guest for 2 years running, so I'll ask it to you again. I've probably asked you this before. So obviously we know of Acerbi, and it seems he will extend his contract. After all, there was a little problem there, but it seems to be back in line. He's obviously been excellent for them. But other than Acerbi, is there, who's the defender on the squad right now that you trust the most?
Yeah, so you did ask me this last time. I think my answer is going to stay the exact same. I think I'm going to still have to go with Stefan Radu just due to the experience and the intelligence that he brings to the game, and also that he's one of the leaders on the team. So I think these are all important factors when you're looking at a starting 11 to have someone like him in the team and who you can rely upon and trust upon. A lot of people would maybe say Luis Felipe is the kind of next big and upcoming thing that Lazio can rely on. But personally, I don't feel that he's had enough experience and enough quality to be named ahead of Stefan Radu in regards to trusted. I see him make a lot of mistakes. And obviously, Radu and everyone else does. Everyone's human. But I definitely feel that Radu is that cornerstone in Lazio right now, who's been going for so many years. And that if I had to choose between the two of them, I'd take Radu.
Okay, I'm not sure if it's a good thing that your answer hasn't changed since I've asked you this, but kudos to Radu. Probably not. You would have probably hoped somebody emerged since then. Okay, so besides the ones we've talked so far, what Lazio players are you intrigued to see this season?
Well, seeing that Fares has finally been completed, as it stands, he's training in training with Lazio today. I feel like he's, after Mudici, is the next kind of player that I'd say I'm excited to see in action with this Lazio team. We've seen what Manuel Lazzari brings when he was signed to Ball as well, and Frades is coming from the exact same core team. He's able to play in that 3-5-2 formation. He's a similar player to Lazzari and Lulic all around when you're looking at stats and just minutes played in the Serie A over recent years. So I'm excited to see what he brings. Obviously, he's got that pace like Lazzari too. He can whip in those crosses too, or Immobile, or new signing Mudici. So I think he's one of the main ones that I'm looking forward to, but also one of the youth players, Raul Moro, who we've seen in action kind of over preseason and a little bit at the end of last year. He's currently playing with the Primavera, but hopefully he's able to get some appearances in Serie A under Simone Inzaghi, and we'll see what he brings.
Okay, so good stuff, Steve. So before we chat a little bit about your excellent site, the Laziali, let's do some over-unders on Lazio. By now, you know the rules. Obviously, Mobile coming off an insane season of 36 goals. You know, putting an over-under, asking him to hit 30 again is a lot. So I have a feeling you're going to go over, but I set it at 27.5. Do you think he'll go over that total? And if you think he'll go over, by how much?
Yeah, so a lot of these over and unders, I feel like I'm going to give my personal take first and then a realistic take. But obviously, I'd like him to win the Capo Cananiere again. But on a realistic note, I do think that that number is going to be lower, especially if Mudici is kind of swapping in more often. I feel like that factor has a lot to do with it. And obviously, the fact if any injuries occur. But if everything kind of goes as planned, and I think Mudici's playing as much as Correa and as much as Immobile, I think that his goal total will be under in Serie A. But that doesn't say that he could kind of capitalize on the Coppa Italia and Champions League as well.
Okay. Next up, Muriqi. I said the over-under for him at 8.5, kind of taking Caicedo from recent years as a model. What are your expectations for Muriqi? Do you think he'll go over that 8.5?
I personally would like to say yes. I think that obviously, like I've said before, he's not experienced in a top five league, but I feel that he's reaching his prime and he's kind of got that experience as a striker under his belt now for the past 3-4 seasons. He's been reaching at least, I think it's 15 goals, if not more, in all competitions for his teams in previous years. So obviously Italy's a big jump and it's a different story. We've seen that with Dennis Vavro from last year when a lot of people said he was going to be able to adapt right away. But I'd like to say that even on an international level, I've seen him play a few times and I think that he's an exciting prospect who can definitely score more than 8.5 or 8 goals, 8-9 goals next year.
Okay, let's close on Strakosha, the goalkeeper. I thought last season maybe not up to his usual standards. I mean, I doubt Piperina will start much, but I think it's good that he has some real competition now. So last season he had 11 clean sheets. I'm gonna say he might do better. So if I set the over under at 11.5, what do you say? Do you think he'll go over or under that?
Yeah, I think this is the toughest out of the three. Like you said, last season was definitely not one of his best, I felt. And in previous years, he's kind of kept Lazio in matches. He's made those key saves, but a lot of the times we were seeing just mistakes happen or just saves not being made in certain games. So even looking at his 11 clean sheets of last season, that was even surprising to some extent. But I feel like this season coming up, it'll be a similar number, if not exactly 11. I think it'll be one or one each way, under or over, so 10 or 12, personally, in Justin Sedia.
Okay. So now let's chat about your excellent site, the Laziale. You guys have been around for a while. Really, really great resource for Lazio fans. So tell a little bit, our listeners, what they can expect from you guys.
Yeah, for sure. So as David just said, the Laziale was founded in 2018. Since then, it's kind of grown to a huge following on Twitter and Facebook. We've met a lot of good people, and we're looking to continue kind of putting out this great content moving forward into the new season. So news, features, match reports, match previews, features, anything that kind of crosses the minds of Laziale and who are willing to write on the site, that's all put on there. So we're looking forward for another good season.
Awesome. Well, Steve, it was really wonderful catching up with you. Really, really great stuff chatting about Lazio. Thank you for giving us an overview of the team. And everyone, check out the work on the Laziale. And I look forward to chatting again with you real soon during the season, my friend.
Absolutely, David. Thank you again for having me on.
Awesome. Great stuff from Steve. Really enjoy Steve on the pod and on Twitter. And now, let's transition to a segment we all enjoy for multiple reasons, but it always symbolizes that we have football. We have football. So, David, let's get to winners and losers, and let's, of course, start with our winners.
Absolutely. Yeah, so almost all the Serie A teams came back. There were three matches that didn't take place. Those were for the teams that went deep in European competitions. They will be making up those games on the 30th, but we saw a good amount of the Serie A team, starting with Fiorentina's win against Torino. Biraghi, who came back from Inter, actually had a really, really good game at left wing back. Chiesa played right wing back, and I thought there was a lot of criticism on Twitter about him in that role until he had that really good assist on Castrovilli on that run. So both Biraghi and Chiesa winners, as well as Castrovilli, scores first match wearing the number 10 at Fiorentina Antonioni's old number. We do want to give a shout out to Torino goalkeeper Sirigu. Once again, sensational. There was buzz Sirigu could leave this summer because he was looking for new motivations. But man, Torino should be happy they have him. He's still one of the elite keepers in Serie A. Couple of shout outs on positive, and there's a big negative on the Verona Roma match. Couple of shout outs. I have to say, as I did my research, I think Verona is still a very solid team. We know they lost three key players, but they still have Faraone, had a really good game at on right wing back position. Silvestri, their goalkeeper, underrated, very good keeper. They still have Miguel Veloso. So both Faraone and Silvestri winners for their performance against Roma. The best player on Roma that match was Spinazzola. Encouraging because he's essentially taking call out of all his starts this season. And I thought Pedro was pretty good in his debut for Roma. With the uncertainty with Zeko, they go with Mkhitaryan, kind of a false nine, and Pedro supporting him up front. I thought he was fine in his debut. Then we had Napoli's impressive win at Parma in the second half. Osimhen came off the bench, was really sensational. It was very interesting that Insigne compared him a little bit to Cavani, which on the surface you wouldn't really see, but he said the way he attacked, opened up, the, you know, put himself in position up front and deep positions, he said that reminded him of Cavani. We also had Lozano, who coming off a bust season, started and played pretty well. So he's another winner. Then we had my Sassuolo, kind of my adopted team in Serie A, home against Cagliari. In the first half, Sassuolo were really good, just couldn't score. Cagliari, the game, Cagliari impressive. Simeone scored, played well. Standouts in that game to me in the midfield, we had Locatelli and Nandez. Locatelli on Sassuolo, Nandez on Cagliari. I expected both of them to be sold this summer, staying at their teams. Really, really valuable players. Then we had what maybe was the best game of the weekend, Genoa hosting Crotone. Big win for Genoa. I have to say, Zappa Costa, I don't know if you saw that goal, Alex. He channeled his inner Reece James, really killer shot from outside. Impressive debut for him. Same for Piaka, who scored. He arrives on loan from Juve. And I have to say, Destro looked really quite good. Last season didn't score any goals at all. So it seems Maran, his first game, new coach at Genoa, looked good. Granted, Crotone just came up from Serie B, and it showed. And then we had Juve's very impressive win against Sampdoria. I tweeted it. To me, Juve looked like a team that got rid of a coach that they really hated. Sarri was always an odd fit. In really a lot of ways, Juve played the way Sarri would have wanted them, except for the three at the back, that free-flowing style. Juve looked really, really good. Shout-outs to a few players. McKinney, really, really good. Starts over Arthur, essentially, and played really well. Ramsey looked really fantastic supporting the strikers. Frabotta at a left-back surprise start. I thought he looked fine, more than adequate. And my boy Kulusevski, awesome goal. Beyond that, I thought he played really, really well. Just has that extra gear that Juve players have been lacking. Very, very happy for him. And then yesterday, we had Milan, who played Bologna in the Monday night game. Very solid win at home. Ibrahimovic carried the team, scores two goals. Our friend Jesse picked him to win Capocannoniere. Let's see if he's right. And we also had Tonali make his debut. So these are our winners.
Okay. Well, congrats to them. And congrats to Zappa Costa. I know what right back I'm taking, but no, absolutely. Zappa Costa's got a strike in him. We'll never know. I don't know if you remember his debut goal. I think it was his only goal for Chelsea, but I think it was his first game. He shot it from, oh my God, just maybe 40 yards away, and it went in. We'll never know if it was a cross or a shot, but he does kind of have a shot in him. He's no Reece James, but yeah, congrats to him. And definitely not congrats to the next category, David. Who are our losers?
Yeah, so let's start with the Fiorentina-Torino match. Zaza, huge miss, surprise. Well, actually not surprise, because Giampaolo likes to play with two strikers. Not a good game for Zaza and a huge miss. In the Sampdoria match, Berezinski, their right back, got absolutely torched. Napoli, I have to say, I'm going to put Gattuso as a loser. I know they won, but this idea of not starting Mire and keep going with Ospina, definitely concerning. There was buzz that Mire was going to start. So one to watch there. Also, Parma keeper Sepe, who last season was quite good, did not play well against his former team, Napoli. But by far, the biggest losers of the weekend are Roma. I don't know if you heard about this, Alex, but 0-0 draw at Verona that will likely be changed to 3-0 loss at Tavolino, as they would say in Italy. Essentially a forfeit because Roma did not include Diarra on the list they gave Serie A for their 25 players for the season, yet played in this match. Big no-no, so Roma's expected to lose this match 3-0. I guess last season they had Diarra on the B list. That still counts. They forgot to move him. So technicality, but really, really poor on Roma. So they are the losers. And people who are certainly not losers are patrons for the Calcio Land podcast. Last week, they got to hear a bonus interview with Napoli Outsider. People in certain tiers got my column on the transfer rumor Raider, and every patron gets much longer versions of the podcast, especially today, where we answer all their questions, and we have a great Calcio Land community on Patreon. So if you enjoyed the show, consider becoming a patron. Okay, so with the season starting this weekend, we want to catch up on all the major teams. And one of them that we saw in the first game of the season was Fiorentina. And there's really no one better to chat about Fiorentina than our dear friend Chloe Beresford. She's been on the podcast many times. Chloe's been working on a new project for the past few months. her newsletter, podcast, and community, Curva and Calcio, which is really excellent. We'll get to that at the end of the podcast. But first, we will chat Fiorentina. So, Chloe, it's always wonderful to talk to you. Bentornata to Calcioland.
Thank you, David. It's great to be back.
Okay, so let's start with a Fiorentina. We saw them on Saturday, and I have to say I tweeted right before they scored, and I guess my powers are still strong with that, that I felt like I had seen this Fiorentina games, home games, so many times last season where, you know, they play pretty well, create a lot of chances, and ultimately don't win, but at least on Saturday, it went the other way. So with that in mind, and I would say Serie A as a whole getting better, the teams at the top, what position at the end of the season would you say is a positive season for Fiorentina? Where do you see them in the standings where you'd be like, okay, this was a good season for us?
I think in an ideal world, I'd like to see them push for a Europa League place. But realistically speaking, like you say, there are lots of teams that are very strong this season. I think anything sort of eighth and above would be a positive season for Fiorentina.
Yeah, that sounds about right when you look at the other teams, the payrolls, and who they brought in. So a lot was made about Chiesa during this game. He was playing out on the wing in Iachini's 3-5-2. I had read a lot of negative comments on that. Then, of course, he comes through with a great run with the assist there. So what do you make about the way Iachini is using Chiesa right now? Do you think he can develop and take an extra step in his career in this role, the way Fiorentina plays right now?
I think, obviously, it's not his ideal position playing as a wing-back, but I think that with Chiesa, I think because of the family pedigree that he comes from, he's often displayed a bit of a kind of too big for his boots attitude. I think he almost sometimes thinks he's better than he actually is. And we all know he's got bags and bags of potential. But when you actually look at what he's contributed in terms of goals and assists, it's not actually all that much. And we still refer to him as a young player, but you look at the performance that Kulusevski put in for Juve last night, and Kulusevski is younger than Chiesa, you know? So I think, you know, he's got to grow up, and I think sometimes making him play in more of a team role is perhaps about making it his, developing his mentality more than anything else. Whether he'll stay, I don't know, but he still has a lot of work to do, really.
Yeah, I certainly agree there, but credit where it's due. That run was certainly impressive.
Yeah,
so I don't know if you've noticed, Chloe, but Milan fans have their eyes set on your team. There's quite a few players that have been linked to Milan, and both of them don't have that much long left on their contract, which makes the situation a little bit more stressful for Fiorentina. But if you could only retain one, and obviously, hopefully they both stay, because I like this idea of more strong Serie A teams. Hopefully both Chiesa and Milenkovic stay. But looking at how Fiorentina is constructed right now, in your opinion, who is more important to retain of the two?
I think it's definitely Milenkovic. He is still very young. He's got an old head on his shoulders. And I think defenders like him they contribute with goals. He's good on the ball. He's intelligent tactically. They're harder to come by than good attackers. And as much as Chiesa is sort of linked to Florence and in all those ways, I think an attacker is easier to replace, like just looking at it purely from that point of view. I like you say, hope we keep them both, but certainly Milenkovic is the most important.
Absolutely. So we didn't see Amrabat on Saturday. We will very soon. I think he's one of the most exciting players in Serie A last season. Quite a few people had him on their ideal starting 11 for the season. That's how good he was at Verona. And obviously, Fiorentina has another really intriguing midfielder in Castrovilli, who scored the game winner on Saturday. So what do you expect from these two together? And how excited should Fiorentina fans be at the prospect of having Castrovilli and Amrabat playing together?
I think we should be really excited. I mean, it's been a long time since Fiorentina have had a good midfield. And I think the combination of the way they play, they're quite different in style, that they will really sort of complement each other. Like you say, Amrabat comes with such a good reputation from last season. And he's really, I think it's a really, really good signing from Fiorentina. Castrovilli's just been handed the number 10 shirt, so it shows how important he is to the club. He exploded onto the scene last year, and he looks like he's continued with that improvement, and he's not fazed by being in the first team. So, I think everybody in Serie A, all the fans should look out for those two and enjoy their football. I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, no, they are definitely some of the sauciest players in the league. Should be a lot of fun. So those aren't the only, you know, there's other exciting midfielders on Fiorentina, and there's two older ones that join the team. One is a very welcome return. I know there's a lot of affection for Borja Valero, and the other is Giacomo Bonaventura, who played pretty well on Saturday. Now, obviously, compared to Castrovilli and Amrabat, they are a little bit further along in their career. But what do you expect from these two? What do you think they can bring to Iacchini's midfield?
I think it's good to have different options in that area. Fiorentina haven't had depth for quite a long time. But the main thing is that both of them come with a vast amount of experience. And Fiorentina have been a young team for a long time now, but they've really lacked those sort of old, experienced heads. And obviously that started with bringing in Ribéry at the beginning of last season. But particularly Borja Valero, who knows the city, understands the fans, I think it gives some personality and some direction to the team to have somebody like that into the squad who can say to the younger players, look, you know, don't do this because of this. Or, you know, he can give them some direction. And I'm really pleased to have them both this year.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely exciting there. Are there any other players on Fiorentina that you're particularly excited to follow this season?
I think Christian Kwame is an intriguing one. I think, you know, obviously Fiorentina signed him last year while he was still injured. And I think had he not been injured, that more clubs would have been in to buy him. And I think he looked lively on Saturday. He was maybe a little bit unlucky not to score. I think he's got bags of potential, and it will be interesting to see how he does, because I don't think a club like Fiorentina would have maybe had the best chance of signing him if he'd have been fit last year. So maybe they've punched a bit above their weight with him.
Yeah. So a perfect segue, because we're going to do a couple of over-unders this time of year with the season starting. This is a good way to kind of gauge where you're at with certain players, and I picked three of them. So let's start with Kwame, who I totally agree. I really, really talented player. I loved watching him play with Piontek at Genoa. I'm really quite excited for him at Fiorentina. But, you know, he does create a lot of chances. Maybe not the most cynical finisher, I would say. So if I set an over-under for Kwame, and this is just in Serie A, at 12.5 goals for this season, would you take the over or the under, Chloe?
I'm going to be optimistic and say over, but I wouldn't have thought it would be much over that. I don't think he'll, I'm not saying he's going to score 20 goals or anything, but, you know, maybe around the 13 mark. If you think of Giovanni Simeone, he got around that mark for Fiorentina. I'm going to be optimistic and say that, but it's close on that one.
Yeah, I agree. Again, great player. I'm not sure if he'll ever be a huge volume scorer, but definitely brings a lot to the table. So let's go on the assumption Chiesa stays. For him, I'm going to set an over-under that's based on goals and assists. So last season, between goals and assists, he had 16, which I have to say surprised me. He had to finish the season strong. So if I set the over-under at 17.5 goals and assists, and mind you, he already has one assist, so he needs 16.5 more to beat it. If he stays at Fiorentina, would you take the over or the under? 17.5 has one, so needs 16.5 to beat it.
Yeah. I think maybe because if he carries on at wing-back, maybe he'll struggle in that regard. Like you say, he has already got one, but I'm going to go under with that. I think maybe he stays at around the same as last season.
Okay, so let's go to the goalkeeper. And I think Dragowski is one of the most underrated keepers in Serie A. Replaced Lafont, and I think it's been an upgrade for him. So last season, he had 8 clean sheets. Has one on Saturday already. So if I set the over-under at 9.5, he needs 8.5 more clean sheets to beat it. What are you taking? This is a good question to gauge on how you feel about Fiorentina's defense as a whole.
Yeah, I actually think having a much better midfield this season will help to protect the defense. I think they'll keep hold of the ball more. And then, you know, obviously that then doesn't put the centre-backs under as much pressure. So I'm going to go over on that for the clean sheet.
Awesome. Good stuff. Okay, Chloe. So this, for the past few months, you've been involved with a great project. You are one of my favorite Serie A writers, and you've been building a great community. So tell us a little bit about Curva in Calcio, how all this started, and what can people expect if they get a subscription, which I definitely encourage you to do at Curva in Calcio.
It was really when the pandemic hit that a lot of places that I sort of freelance for, quite understandably, their budgets were hit and the work kind of dropped off. So I decided to take matters into my own hands, and I came across this site called Substack, which allows you to create a newsletter and podcast all in one, all wrapped up in one, that people can pay a small fee to subscribe to. I know a lot of people get frustrated with adverts and you know, pop-ups appearing all over the page. So this is completely clean with no adverts. But obviously, with no adverts, you have to generate some revenue somehow. So I've asked the people who support me, people who like to read my stuff, to pay a small amount each month, and that will keep it completely ad-free. They get all the content, usually one post a day on Serie A. Couple of podcasts a week, it's a nice community. We've got now a chat function where people can talk about Serie A. They can talk about all different aspects of it, and you know, it's just everybody's been great so far. It's going really well.
Absolutely. No, you have a great community. You are fantastic. I love talking Calcio with you. So I definitely encourage anyone who subscribes to Calcio Land and wants to expand even further, being in a Calcio community, definitely check out Curva and Calcio. So Chloe, I can't thank you enough. Always wonderful to catch up with you. And I look forward to chatting with you during the season.
Yeah, you too, David. Thank you.